I'm John McKee, editor of Messianic Apologetics, and this is Messianic Theology Explained. At least, we hope so. Elders and deacons. Throughout a great deal of messianic discussion and even debate, we use the term ecclesiology, which is the study of the ecclesia, the people of God, to mainly involve what it means to be a part of the commonwealth of Israel. Jewish believers, non-Jewish believers, Jewish people who are non-believers. They don't believe in Yeshua as Messiah. And it involves the role of the Torah for Jewish and non-Jewish people, and of course the future destiny of God's people concerning the restoration of Israel, whether or not there is a pre-tribulation rapture, etc. Those are some of the things which get discussed and debated in terms of messianic ecclesiology. But ecclesiology as the study of the people of God, the assembly, the ecclesia, in evangelical Protestantism mainly concerns a lot of the nuts and bolts of the local congregation of believers. And it involves who is qualified for leadership. What are the different offices of elder and deacon intended to be? And effectively, who runs the congregation, who administers the congregation, how are decisions made, how are problems resolved, etc. One resource which I've had in my library for quite some time, which can give you a good idea about some of the diversity present in certainly a great deal of Protestantism, is this resource, Who Runs the Church? Four Views on Church Government, released in 2004 by Zondervan. And as a matter of information, you see four different models at least discussed here: Episcopalianism, Presbyterianism, single elder congregationalism, or plural elder congregationalism. But ecclesiology is fiercely discussed and debated in a great deal of Protestantism, even among those who would consider themselves to be conservative. Now, the issue of an elder or a deacon in the local congregation or assembly of believers, with it widely acknowledged that an elder is more of a senior position and a deacon is more of a junior position. Elders are typically those who are involved with teaching, instruction, correction, much of the high-level decision-making. Deacons, while involved in perhaps some teaching, some instruction, some level of decision-making, are also seen to have different maintenance roles, or they oversee different functions of the local assembly. And much of that goes back to ancient Judaism and the role of the perhaps synagogue mevaker or the shamash, etc. Elders and deacons and what they are to mainly do principally comes down to two main passages in the apostolic scriptures. 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 13, and Titus 1, 5 through 9. And I'd like to read these to you. 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 13. Trustworthy is the saying, If any man aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a good work. An overseer, then, must be beyond criticism, the husband of one wife, clear-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine, not violent, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money, managing his own household well, keeping his children under control with all respectfulness. But if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's community? He must not be a new believer, or he may become puffed up and fall into the same judgment as the devil. Furthermore, he must have a good reputation with those outside so that he will not fall into disgrace and the devil's trap. Servant leaders, likewise, must be dignified, not double-speaking, not addicted to much wine, not greedy for dishonest gain. They must keep hold of the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. Also, let them first be tested, and then let those who are blameless serve as servant leaders. Women, likewise, must be dignified, not backbiting, clear-minded, trustworthy in every respect. Let servant leaders be husbands of one wife, managing their children and their own households well. For those who have served well as servant leaders gain for themselves a good standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Messiah Yeshua. 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 13, Tree of Life Version. And also Titus 1, verses 5 through 9. The reason I left you in Crete was so that you would set in order the things that remain and appoint elders in every city as I directed you. If anyone is blameless, the husband of one wife, having children of faith with no charge of wild living or rebellion. For the overseer must be blameless as God's administrator. Not arrogant, not quick-tempered, not addicted to wine, not violent, nor greedy for dishonest gain. Rather, he must be hospitable, loving what is good, self-controlled, upright, devout, disciplined. He must hold firmly to the trustworthy message in keeping with the teaching, so he can both encourage by instruction that is sound and convict those who speak against it. Titus 1, 5 through 9, Tree of Life Version. Now in 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 13, you see various stipulations for both elders, also it may appear as overseers, as well as deacons. The Tree of Life Version says servant leaders. And then in Titus 1, 5 through 9, you see further requirements or other requirements for overseers. Now, these two passages, among others in the apostolic writings, have been highly dissected from the days of the Protestant Reformation to our present time, as well as fiercely debated. You have seen them approached and applied differently among various interpretational traditions. And I have two main points I'd like to raise for you, which I think many of you are probably unaware of. Number one, there are religious traditions or denominations which seemingly add qualifications to leadership from those seen in these passages. And the most frequent qualification which people would say, oh, you're adding to the Word of God, of course, would be, well, if our tradition, our denomination is going to have someone recognized as an elder or even a deacon, then they need to possess some kind of academic credentials in the realm of theology, biblical studies, ministry. And indeed, whether you like Roman Catholicism or not, it has always required its priests to go through some kind of religious studies training. The major traditions which come out of the Protestant Reformation, Lutheranism, Calvinism, and then Wesleyanism, the main denominations associated with those theological schools, they all require their clergy to go through some kind of religious studies training. Now, that doesn't mean that there are not independent groups out there which don't care that much about formal religious studies training, but that tends to be the main requirement that people accuse, well, you've added to the Word of God. And then it's responded back with, well, now wait a second. Figures like the Apostle Paul, who gave us this instruction, right? Who gave Timothy and Titus this instruction, he was trained at the feet of Gamaliel in Jerusalem. He had formal religious studies training. So this is a factor which has to be considered if a denomination, a group, is going to formally recognize someone as one of their leaders. So that is perhaps one big area that gets debated with these passages. And the Messianic community is not immune from those debates either. And then the second point I'd like to raise here, and this is something which has been doubtlessly peaked over the past 50 years or more in discussions between not only liberals and conservatives, but even among conservatives. And that would be, are passages such as 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 13, and Titus 1, 5 through 9, universal for all situations? Or were they situational first and foremost for the circumstances Timothy was having to sort out in Ephesus and for Titus on Crete? And those who approach these passages mainly as situational would immediately point out Timothy in Ephesus had to appoint both elders and deacons. Titus only had to appoint elders. So what does that tell you? Why didn't Titus have to appoint deacons? So people who look at these passages as principally being situational would say that has to be weighed into one's application for modern times. Now, generally speaking, all are agreed that the ethical requirements listed in 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 13, and Titus 1, 5 through 9 definitely need to be present among leaders today. But one of the main reasons why the debate has now been piqued and sparked concerns the ongoing controversy of females as ordained clergy and the role of, in particular, the Ephesian false teaching and how women had been some of the main promoters of it, etc. And that goes beyond the scope of our discussion today. But this just gives you, hopefully, a feel for how elders, deacons, their leadership roles and responsibilities have been approached in some broad strokes, certainly since the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. And today's Messianic community is definitely affected by these matters. One resource I have in my library by Sam Nadler. Some of you may be familiar with this. This edition was released in 2016, Developing Healthy Messianic Congregations. And this definitely goes into some of the factors which I have mentioned here. And if you would like to know more about some of my own approach to 1 Timothy, Titus related issues, you may consider getting a copy of our Ministry Commentary, the Pastoral Epistles for the Practical Messianic. And that covers 1 Timothy, Titus, and 2 Timothy. Certainly, if any of you have a particular issue or subject you would like to see us address, right here, I have a stack of index cards that just keeps getting topped off. And I take your suggestions very seriously, and at the right time, I hope we can get around to the issues which matter to not only you, but all of us. On behalf of Outreach Israel Ministries and Messianic Apologetics, I would like to sincerely thank you for your ongoing prayers, encouragement, and donations for all of our ministry efforts. Without you, we couldn't do any of this. We'll see you again soon with another installment of Messianic Theology Explained. Until then, may God bless you, shalom, and take care.